1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And 51551 is our text number. Anne Kelly, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And your contact, you said you describe Alan Shatter's speech this morning as a blah blah speech. What do you mean?
Yes. Well, he speaks in such a technical way that it's very difficult to actually get to the meaning of what he's saying. Mm-hmm. And he said it very fast because he read it. And I think he's a genius at his choice of words, because in actual fact, you have to parse and analyse everything Alan Shatter says in order to get to the truth behind them. He says things like, "I was not informed of this or that," giving the impression that he didn't know about it. But that's mm-hmm. a different thing entirely. What he means, or what is hidden behind "I was not informed," is that he was not officially informed. But he could well know about everything and anything. But yet when he says, "I was not informed," he knows he's giving the impression that he didn't know, which is really misleading. And another thing is, I find that his choice of words, he referred to the potential gravity of the taping of the conversations in the Garda stations. Potential. I found the choice of potential very strange and disturbing. He also mentioned, he also said that something was unfortunate in connection with one of the issues. And I burst out laughing here because I thought, oh, it's just a series of unfortunate events. It's nothing to do with him. You know, and in actual fact, the first man who got up was Niall Collins to speak after Shatter had gone through all his clarifications. And he was very good. It was a relief to listen to him because everything he said was crystal clear. No verbal riddles, just a very straightforward account of the series of incompetent handlings of matters by Shatter, in a way that any lay Irish person would have done. It was such a relief.
Okay, say there, Collins. Niall Collins stood up and he said he wants Alan Shatter to resign.
And with justification. Collins emphasised that Shatter always finds someone else to blame for whatever happens. It's never him. Even though the book obviously stops with the minister. You know, he had self-interested, glowing and lengthy praise for the work of the Garda Síochána. But Joe, here's the rub. Yet he treated two of the most praiseworthy Garda in the force with utter disdain. Were the whistleblowers not members of the Garda Síochána too? Shatter has a legal brain. People like Sergeant McCabe and Garda Wilson are invaluable to society. They are the people who force the necessary changes to secure a workplace for people who want to follow and uphold the highest principles of law and order. They are the ones now who will, I hope, they will force some changes in the Gardaí who will make it a workplace for people who want to do things right and principled. So in spite of Shatter's glowing praise for the Gardaí, he refuses to withdraw the misleading comments about two of the most valuable members of the force. He said they had not cooperated with the committee investigating their complaints. This was one of Shatter's little word tricks. He said they did not cooperate. But the point is, they weren't asked to cooperate. They weren't contacted. I mean, this is my point about Shatter. Mm-hmm. You really and truly have to read through the lines of everything that man says in order to come to the truth of things. And another thing is, if I can just say one thing about Claire Daly and Mick Wallace. Claire Daly and Mick Wallace were the people who brought up the issues of the wiping of penalty points in the Dáil. And look what happened to them.
Okay, the various instances. Stay there for a second. 51551. James is in Mullingar. James, good afternoon.
Joe, hi.
Do you think Alan Shatter should resign?
Well, I'm not ringing about Alan Shatter specifically, okay. Joe.
I see in your call here you say
yes,
feel,
I do. Yes,
you say
I
you
do.
Feel
yes,
the minister should resign.
I do indeed.
Okay,
Joe.
But you also think this raises the whole issue of a whistleblower's charter. Go ahead.
Joe, I worked for an organisation with well over 1,000 employees, mm-hmm. and they had all sorts of procedures for health and safety, staff incentive scheme. They had anti-bullying and equality procedures, but they didn't have any whistleblowing. Now, any worthwhile CEO of a company should acknowledge that there's no company perfect, and if it's in that interest that they should have a whistleblower's charter,
okay.
which would not only accommodate whistleblowers, but should actually encourage them, because it'll be for the betterment of the company, as a whole, to have that. The staff see what's going on in the company that the CEO may not see, or for whatever reason may not hear about. So that's my main suggestion.
Yeah, but is the problem there not what has already happened with whistleblowers? And there have been a couple of them in the HSE on this programme and that they're portrayed, I'm not saying by the HSE, but they are portrayed by organisations or whatever as cranks, as having an agenda. It's not the thing we have to try and overcome.
Joe, how true.
Is that not true of what happened John Wilson and Maurice McCabe?
And Sergeant McCabe, exactly. How do they feel today? I'm guessing they don't feel lauded by their employers or by the Gardaí, but they should be. I mean, as that lady said, they are heroes. Whistleblowers are heroes, and if they're not proven to be vexatious, they're acting in the interest of their company or their employers. So, like, it's a virtue.
So you think whistleblowers should have protection? That's the key, isn't it?
No. My suggestion, Joe, is that companies should not only accommodate but encourage whistleblowing in their ranks.
Yeah. Now, in fairness, the vast majority of companies have nothing untoward to be worried about.
Joe, could I just come in here?
Yes,
we don't know that. We don't know what's mm-hmm. happening. People are afraid. For heaven's sake, Joe. I'm sure Dr. Neary found that midwife disgusting at the time.
This is the midwife that blew the whistle on the...
Yes.
We don't know what's happening
because of the culture we have concerning whistleblowers. And it's so wrong because it allows things to go on forever.
Okay,
which should be stopped.
I mean, we only have to reflect, Joe, on the medical profession. I mean, imagine the turmoil those poor people who have taken actions against some consultant or some hospital over a grievance. Imagine if whistleblowers were accommodated and encouraged in hospitals to report such instances. I mean, how much pain would be avoided?
Let me bring Pat Hughes in. 51551 is our text number, joe@rte.ie. Pat, good afternoon. You think this whole, the background to this whole issue, or the bedrock in one sense, the whole penalty points, carry on. You think that's going to backfire on the public?
Oh, yeah.
In what way, Pat? Yeah.
And just before I come to that point, Joe, just quickly preface my point by saying this idea that Alan Shatter is held up as a reforming minister, I don't buy that at all. I think it would be strangled by legislation. So I don't buy this stuff at all.
And then when you hear Niall Collins and the technical group, Stephen Donnelly calling for Alan Shatter's resignation, do you think that will make a difference?
Well, if someone had to go, it should be him. I don't think it's right that Martin Cannon should have gone, because apart from a diplomatic error, like he didn't do anything wrong. But to get to the point you've just mentioned, Joe, about backfiring, yes, this is all dismissed. It will backfire on the public, because Gardaí will not be able, or maybe will not willing, mm-hmm. to use discretion anymore. And that's when people will know how much, just my point about the fact that we are being strangled by legislation, how oppressive legislation can be if we have Gardaí who are not using common sense, discretion and all that. Like, if anybody is held up, I'm not talking about big serious things, they will plead their case with the Gardaí, and sometimes the Gardaí will use discretion and say, okay. Now, if that goes, like, we're at a huge loss, because for a start, See, that's why the serious matter here is the Garda morale has been affected, and that's not good. And you see, for society as well, you need cooperation between Gardaí and the public. So you need Gardaí with common sense, discretion, and that sometimes that discretion will be used, of course, abused. That is a fact.
And that's now gone, because every guard is going to be looking over his shoulder, saying,
"Exactly." That's why whistleblowers can be a proper nuisance at times, you know. You know what I mean? Because because the system is unfair, it needs to be changed. But this whistleblower, I was in the gas, right? I could be whistleblowing every day if I wanted. That's not the way the system works, you know. You know what I'm thinking? You know, you have to kind of see the way things go and try and be fair and reasonable and be decent with people and all that. Like, you're thinking of, you know, you can't be blowing whistles every minute, you know, because no system could operate on that kind of thing, you see. So I'm not, but I think, as I say, like that's my main concern, is that it would backfire on society and people in general. Like, you know,
do you think the commissioner was unfairly treated?
Oh, he was. What did the poor devil do? He said disgusting. Okay, that was a bad choice of words. But he was referring to a procedure that he didn't totally disagreed with. Now, he's entitled to his opinion. You know, he didn't do anything wrong. Why should he resign, for God's sake? You know. So I think.
And then, Patty, you're following this latest sequence of events. We spoke about it yesterday at the end of the program when it broke with Walter Kilcullen on talking about the so-called recording and taping and recording of phone calls in and out of Garda stations, and he was completely, Walter Kilcullen was completely unaware of it, and any Garda we've spoken to since was unaware of it as well. But now the sequence of events seemed to be playing out in favour of the Garda Commissioner, that he did bring this issue to the attention of the minister, that he did. Alan Shatter says it never got to him.
Yeah. That's why, kind of, you see, if Shatter went, well, who would miss him? Like, you know, but Cannon going has serious repercussions for a lot of things, you know. Like, you know, so that's why, kind of, if anyone should go, I think Shatter should go. But I don't. I'm not the type to be calling for heads either. But anyway, but I think in the see what has happened, Joe. Let's face it. It's become a political football as well. Like, and that's another thing. But it's a mess now, Joe. And I don't know. I just don't know.
Okay, say what is 51551. Is Ray Holland there? Ray, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
Back on the ground about speeding tickets and penalty points, which has had the country convulsed between all the various aspects of it, and then GSOC came in, and then the bugging, and then more bugging, or allegations of bugging. But back to where it all started, penalty points, and what actually happens on the ground. Go ahead. What happened was yesterday, was it? Yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, so I went into the district court yesterday in Chantry Street with my daughter. She's 18, she lives at home. She got a summons, a guard called the house about 3 weeks ago with a summons to appear for a non-payment of a speeding fine.
Okay.
And we never received, or she never received the notice of the penalty and the fine in the post. So we automatically, you get a summons to go in. So we went in, she's going to go in her own. Anyway. But the court listing that day, you know, had a numerous traffic offences, and while we were there, there was about at least a half dozen cases of people who hadn't paid their fines, and all of them, their situation was that they had not received the notice in the post, like okay. My daughter.
Yeah. And, they said they didn't get the letter.
Yes, I can't speak for the other people, but I can genuinely say I noticed a government letter, a stamped letter come with a harp coming into the house. She didn't receive it, I know that for a fact. And so anyway, you go in and you're asked to plead guilty or non-guilty. So I said, well, okay, we're pleading guilty. We're not disputing the fact that she was speeding because the photographic evidence is there. But we did not receive the notice, hence we're in court facing double penalty points and a fine. And So the judge let her off with a €100 donation to charity. But other people in the court had contested it, and one poor man had a barrister there. Mm-hmm. Cost a lot of money, I presume. He also said that he didn't receive the notice in the post. So he had to make a €200 donation to charity. And several other cases were the exact same situation.
Well, hang on, Ray, why does someone have to make a €100 donation and someone had to make a 200 euro donation for the same plea.
Okay, well, my daughter's finding. My daughter's a student. She stated that maybe the judge was lenient on her, which is okay, fine. But what I'm sort of trying to bring to people's attention is it can't be coincidence that all of these people are not getting the notice of the post. I mean, is it a situation that the system is falling down somewhere, that these notices are not being received by people?
Okay, and you say there was quite a, many people, you say, were pleading the same
argument. Six cases, and we didn't obviously stay for the rest of the cases. There's a lot of road traffic offences listed for the hearing yesterday morning in the court. But the same Garda, you know, who was manning, representing the Gatso van situation, was there. And, you know, to me, it seems Ardy's under. You're not allowed to question, Joe, whether, first of all, can you? You'd like to ask, well, show me the letter that was sent out as proof. You know, you must have a copy of the letter. So,
and did I say, by the way, I know it's slightly off the point, but what you're talking about is how the system actually impacts on real people in their daily lives to go about them. Do they send out a registered letter for?
No, it's not a registered letter. It's an ordinary letter. It's not a registered letter because that's traceable, obviously, and then there's a paper trail there. But it's not a registered letter. So that's the situation. I mean, also then, you know, when you think about this word, right, my daughter didn't get her two penalty points. You know, whereas if the system had it worked and she got a notice in the post, she would have got her penalty points. So people are getting away with penalty points. Well, I'm glad for her. Obviously, it's only a prison life of order. But so there's that issue that people are. And then there's a revenue issue. The government are missing out on all this revenue because the money's gone to charity.
And Ray, when you were waiting around yesterday, was everyone talking about the.
It's a situation. Like, I mean, people are all. You know, and people are you know. The other thing, Joe, is that if you contest this, like the judge, one man contested it, and the judge says simply, "Well, how can you prove? Can you prove to me that you know there's issues with the non-delivery of posts in your area? What have you done? Have you contacted them posts about this? But then who polices this? You know, if you're getting posts, then who? You know, it's something you're never going to win an argument like that in court. But there's a few issues here, and the key thing to me is that, you know, why did they test the system? Like, you know, get these Gatso vans, let them issue posts.
So what's happening? Stay there for a sec, Ray, and stay there, Anne Kelly. 51551, back after this.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715
815. Brendan Cafferty, 51551 is our text number, and 1850 715 815. Brendan Cafferty is a retired Garda, relatively recently retired, in Mayo. Brendan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Minister Shatter, you say, is tidying up the mess he inherited.
Yes, a lot of those things are historic, and he has inherited, you know, a lot of those things have come onto his desk, you know, not for any action that happened during his term of office, but things that happened some years ago. We'll say that thing of the recording of Garda stations, that's in operation since the 1980s, and in fact, by the last government, it was updated in 2009, as recently as that.
Well, that would have been Fianna Fáil, and the minister then would have been Dermot Ahern, isn't that correct?
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, not that there's anything wrong with that, but I wasn't aware of recording of stations or anything like that. I always knew that if you made a call to the major stations that would be in the west here, like Castlebar, Sligo, Galway, 999 calls, they were always recorded, obviously, but I never heard of stations being recorded as such, you know, outside of that. I think Minister Shatter is a reforming minister. You know, a lot of people don't like him, you know. He's probably a bit unusual. He's not one of the lads. And I've seen some horrible things said about him on Twitter, that he's a friend of Israel.
That's not defamatory. I just thought you were going to start quoting other stuff. Okay. But the other thing, Brendan, this whole bizarre episode between Sunday and Monday, and then with the timeline backdrop, Sunday, Enda Kenny discovers, it seems almost accidentally, about this procedure where calls were being taped and recorded, as they say, in and out of some Garda. Well, they said yesterday in the statement, if I remember correctly, they said a lot of Garda stations. There was a pressure that was meant. But anyway, but then on Monday, Enda Kenny dispatches the Secretary General of the Department of Justice, probably the second most senior Secretary General in the civil service up to the Phoenix Park to have a chat with Martin Callanan, to say to Martin Callanan, the government are taking this issue very, very seriously.
Yes.
But by the same token, according to the sequence of events, Alan Shatter had not even got or opened the letter that Martin Callanan had sent him three weeks ago, March the 11th, that Martin Callanan had sent him on March the 11th about that self-same issue. So what's going on?
Well, that is something that has to be explained. And he was, of course...
Do you not think in the atmosphere that was prevailing in this country on Sunday and Monday, and I know before that as well, but especially on Sunday and Monday, especially about Martin Callanan, that for the Secretary General to fetch up on your doorstep of your office up behind the zoo in the Phoenix Park to say the government are very concerned about this issue, you don't need to use Morse code. It's pretty obvious what the government are saying, isn't it?
Well, obviously they're obviously sending them a message there, and you know, they probably want to know what's going on. But
hang on, he already told them.
Yes, but you know, he wrote
on March 11th. He wrote, I presume, it's delivered by hand.
If you let me answer, Joe, there, please. Now, he was out of the country for a while there over St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
You know, that is a fact, and. You know, he's saying he wasn't told. Now, I have to accept that, and I don't know, obviously. But, you know, if he was told and he's saying he's not, well, I'm sure that civil servants... Civil servants wouldn't stand over that, you know what I mean? And they have their integrity.
No, but
too,
I'm saying the Taoiseach decided to send the Secretary-General of the Department of Justice up to the Phoenix Park on Monday to the Garda Commissioner to talk about an issue of such serious import. But bizarrely, the Minister for Justice didn't open the letter until 12:40, which I presume was during the cabinet meeting yesterday morning. So if the issue was that serious, how come the Minister for Justice wasn't also aware of it?
Well, that's obviously a break in communications, you know, and that they have to explain that. Obviously, I can't explain that, and I wouldn't be expected to, you know. You know, getting back to the point about Mr. Shatter, he's a good minister. He has inherited a lot of this. It has landed on his plate. He's going to set up a police authority. You know, he probably accepted the first Garda inquiry. That was the O'Mahony inquiry. Maybe he placed too much store in that, you know. But, you know, he has to accept what he's told. And then he referred it to GSOC and then the Garda Inspectorate. And... you know, a lot of people, as I say, don't like him. You know, judiciary.
I know you talk about the O'Mahony inquiry, but then the Taoiseach this morning in the Dáil wasn't at all as fulsome in his praise of the O'Mahony inquiry as Alan Shatter had been, and said that there was some shortfalls in the O'Mahony inquiry. Well, he would not have thought that from what Alan Shatter had been saying. But anyway, that's now the Taoiseach's belief that inquiry. By the assistant commissioner was flawed. But let stay there for a sec, Brendan. I'm trying to interrogate, why are we getting all these mixed messages, even mixed timelines?
Yeah, well, it's a fluid situation, of course. And Mr. Shatter, no more than anybody else, or no more than the Taoiseach, you know, the Garda Force, the commissioner is a separate entity, you know, and he's not going to be told what to do every, you know, they have overall responsibility at the end of the day. Like, but, you know, if you can't accept reports that you get from the Garda authorities, well, you know, what do you do? If they fall short, well, that is a pretty serious issue, you know. There's just one other point, Joe,
I'll let you come back in a second. Anne Kelly is trying to come back in, Brendan. Anne.
Yes.
What do you think of all this timeline? Can you unravel the timeline that's emerging about the latest?
No. Everybody is just saying anything just to confuse and bamboozle everybody. We're not supposed to be able to understand it even. But what I'd like about Shatter, what I'd like to say about this business of Shatter having inherited...
Yeah, we call him Minister or Alan Shatter, seriously.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, sorry?
Just we call him Minister or Alan Shatter.
Okay, Minister Shatter. About Minister Shatter having inherited problems. Nobody is denying that. What everybody is saying is his handling of the problems is lamentable. It is so incompetent that he must go. It's his handling of the issues.
Set up.
No, not at all.
What was your point there, Brendan?
you know, the Coke inquiry, the Gearton inquiry, and now there's a new inquiry into this thing of the recording. You know, he has to have some regard to due process. He is setting up inquiries into those matters.
But it's what Chatter has done himself, or not done.
What has he done, please?
Or said.
What has he done?
He dismisses anything that might reflect badly on him. Anything. And it all actually reflects back on him. He is the minister. The book stops with him. Anything that has been mishandled or the incompetence in handling things, it stops with him. He's the minister. He's in charge.
He is. And we
There's
have
no excuse. There is no excuse for him. It's been a series now of absolutely lamentable issues coming up, and he swats them away like a fly, nothing to do with me, and then he sets up an inquiry.
Joe, if I might come in there, you know, GSOC issued a report in 2009 to the last Minister for Justice, you know, about saying that the penalty pine system was dysfunctional. Now, that's not Alan Shatter's fault, and there was nothing done about it then. John O'Brien, who worked for GSOC...
All this setting up of...
John O'Brien worked for GSOC, and he sent in a report in 2009 to say the penalty pine system was dysfunctional. And John O'Brien has said that if it had been addressed then, this mess would not arise now.
Well, obviously, Alan Shatter is actually not in charge.
Well,
how could he be, or he'd take responsibility?
What about 2009? My point, Joe, was 2009. The system was dysfunctional. That's what GSOC reported to the then Minister for Justice.
But could you argue, Brandon, I'm not being pleased, I'm not being facile, but could you argue that in 2009 the whole country was dysfunctional and there was more things on ministers' minds insofar as they were...
That's still the case, in a lot of ways.
Well, I know that, but I'm saying the crisis and the chicken with no head syndrome and nobody knew what was happening and bank guarantees and various... But anyway, stay there.
I'd just like to make one extra point, Joe, before I go.
Okay.
About 10 years ago, I was on your programme. I think it might have been with Derek Davis or somebody like that. And the penalty pines was starting that time. And I made the point, and I was actually serving at the time, and I didn't do myself any favours by it. But I could see a lot of trouble arising from all this. You know, people who are barely over the limit, you know, getting fines, penalty fines. And I could see it fractured in the relationship between the guards and the public. And I'm sad to say that's what has happened, and this is what has happened. And maybe there was... It's gone too far, you know, a raise in penalty points. But in hard luck cases, you know, that's going to be taken away from the guards at local level now due to their own fault of abusing the system, possibly. It'll be going to Thurles and Tipperary, and it'll be very hard. And, you know, I have no problem with people who are speeding or racers or anything like that getting penalty points or big fines or anything like that. But I'm thinking of a lot of those vans hidden in isolated places.
Okay, I take all those points. Those arguments have been made, and you're right.
It's the revenue gathered in exercise. PAC regarded as that. It's how much revenue was lost at the state.
Okay, and I
know in Britain, you know, you get a chance possibly to go in and do a half day's road safety course without paying any fine at all. And maybe we should be just...
Okay. And I take your point that the whole issue, the whole issue of penalty points and how they're applied and the difference it would make, and now they've changed, there's now three penalty points for a number of offences, can sunder relations between decent citizens and the Gardaí. Let me bring...
That's
your opinion, and I respect that because of your own background. Thanks indeed, Pat. Let me bring Shay in Glastool in Dublin, then Jane in Cork. 51551 Shane, or Shay.
How you doing? How are you?
Whistleblowers.
Whistleblowers, yeah. I think that there's a victim in this whole thing that everybody needs to remember. It's trust. The victim is trust. And whistleblowers, when they do come forward, they will always be reviled by the people who they're blowing the whistles on, and or people who are in charge. I think that there's nobody really showing any level of leadership here, and the victim at the end of the day is going to be our trust in the system. You know, I don't think, in terms of Minister Shatter's position, I don't think, when you're the boss, I don't think I wasn't aware is a good defence. It's not a good thing.
But how could a minister in the Department of Justice, given its size and its response, he's also Minister for Defence as well, by the way, how could he be aware even physically, even mentally in your brain, how could you accommodate so much information?
Well, in any corporation, any large in commercial corporation, there are heads of department. They're reported to by the various people that they've delegated elements of their portfolio to. They have progress meetings. They are meant to be kept up to date on absolutely everything. That's the only way that a commercial enterprise can go forward. And I don't really think that Ireland is an awful lot different to a commercial enterprise, so that the heads of the department in the government mm-hmm. and things should have full reports given in by, I mean, as you say rightly, he's the Minister for Defence as well. I'm sure he has reports being brought to him by the Chief of Staff of the Army, etc. And that I wouldn't see that the Commissioner for the Gardaí is any different.
And Shay, have you been following the timeline of events that's now emerging about this dramatic statement from the government yesterday that there's been recordings going on?
Yes, I have indeed. Yeah.
And what do you think of that timeline? That suddenly it was extraordinarily important. And
well, I'm becoming less interested in the minutia, to be quite honest with you, Joe.
Okay.
I think it's actually a ruse. I think the whole thing is a ruse. It's all confusing the whole issue. If we look at the broader brushstrokes, yes, maybe it was an unfortunate choice of words by Mr. Callan to refer to the whistleblowers as disgusting. He did make an attempt to clarify that, which didn't seem to wash with anybody. And he should have come forward and said, look, I'm sorry if that was the impression that was given, that wasn't what I meant. But he didn't. Then it came back to Alan Shatter. He should have told him it should have been brought forward in a more orderly fashion. And this would never have happened.
Could I make a point
Anne,
here?
Anne, yes.
Yeah. When Callanan used the word disgusting, he said it was because the whistleblowers were accusing their colleagues of corruption and malpractice, and that they were only two in a force of 13,000. And not as much as a whisper. He used that word, whisper. Not as much as a whisper from any of the other Gardaí. He said that it was clear why he was using the word disgusting. He found that personally disgusting. And he didn't only use the word once, he used it twice. This caused outrage among the public. So much outrage that a spin had to be put on it. And I'm sure Minister Shatter had something to do with this. The spin that Callanan was referring to the way they had presented the information, the way they had accumulated the information. It was not. It was most clearly because they were accusing their colleagues of corruption and malpractice. And if anybody wants to see if anybody wants to look back or somehow listen again to what Callanan said in the committee. Well, he's not a commissioner any longer. It is loud and clear, and what came out afterwards was just a spin. It was a lie, because it's perfectly clear what he made it clear himself when he used the word disgusting twice. It was because
And you're saying that was his opinion, and he didn't resile from that. Sure, he didn't. He didn't resile
yes,
from
yes,
it.
Yes, he did. No, he said it wasn't. It had nothing to do with their character. The spin was, no. His remark had nothing to do with their character. It was the way they had accumulated the information and had publicised it, which was wrong. That was misleading too. That was wrong. That was also wrong. But what he said at the time in the committee was that he found it personally disgusting that they were accusing their colleagues of corruption and malpractice.
But I just wonder, Anne, about your point about Irish people being totally consumed by this. Because I don't know whether, Shay, you were referring to that frame when you said you're not interested in the minutiae anymore. I wonder, are people, on the one hand, they saw it as a political row, and this is Alan Shatter's line as well. Remember this morning, he said, every time something is said, it turns immediately into a political football and a media football. But do you think, Anne's point is, the whole country are convulsed by this, are they?
Again, not in the minutiae. I think it's in a system. We should be convulsed by it because
exactly.
this yeah. is our system. This is our system. And what's coming clear here, whether it's who said what, when they said it, what the timeline of this or the other was, what's coming quite clear here is the system isn't working. And we're paying dearly for it. And that's what would convulse me, for instance, OK? And I'd say that is my own personal point of view. I don't know how that will resonate with other people around the country. But I'm looking at a system that people are being very well paid for in their positions. And the best they can come up with is, I wasn't aware. I'm sorry, that's not a good enough answer.
OK, Shay, stay there. Stay there. 51551. Jane is in... I'll take a quick break, actually. I'm late on breaks. And then to Jane. 51551. Stay there.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Jane is in Cork. Jane, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are things?
Good. You worked in legal, maybe still are, legal criminal research. And did you have interaction with the Department of Justice?
Yes, Joe. I had some interaction with the Department of Justice. And it was quite an eye-opener, really. I suppose I called because I was suggesting that I think the media, regardless of the outcome of what transpires about what the minister did or did not know and the timeline exactly in relation to the whole bugging of phone calls or the listening into important phone calls at the Garda stations, I think there should be more focus generally into the workings of the Department of Justice itself and perhaps other departments and the chain of command that is in place. I think the previous speaker, Shay, was referring to how it's our system and how we pay for all of this. That's absolutely true. And there's a remarkable lack of accountability.
Well, what was your own experience, Jane?
Well, my own experience, Joe, was that I was working on a complicated legal document recommending a whole heap of reforms relation to the criminal law.
Okay.
And there was a senior retired civil servant from the Department of Justice who jokingly said that if that document made its way to his table, it would keep finding its way to the bottom of the pile of documents. And this was because it was complex. It recommended an awful lot of change, and our organs of state are very reluctant to change because it requires different ways of thinking and operating, and the legal profession too generally is reluctant to change the way it's always done things. But the fact that this was a joke struck me as kind of a bit horrific, really, because even though it wasn't an urgent matter like what we've been talking about for the last while, it was symptomatic, I think, of how information can be prevented from reaching the people it's meant to reach, namely the minister and the top civil servants, that if someone lower down the food chain, so to speak, decides this, they won't want to read this. You know, it's too difficult, it's too complicated.
And is that what happened, Jane, insofar as you know?
I couldn't say that it never made its way to the minister at the time. It possibly didn't. But it was the attitude, it's the culture that I'm talking about. There's a culture in the Gardaí that we've heard in some places is perhaps not as healthy as it should be. And I think arguably there's a culture within sections maybe of the Department of Justice and other departments where the civil servants are a bit of a law unto themselves and they can decide who will receive what information when. Now, I'm not saying that happened this time with regard to the whole Garda stations and recording of messages, but to me it's actually quite conceivable that someone was informed of the information and for whatever reason decided not to act on it immediately.
And
you know, things can move at a snail's pace, and I think more needs to be investigated in this regard, because even if the minister does resign, either because of his mishandling of the whistleblower situation, which I believe he has behaved poorly in this regard. But I would say, you know, there's been a lot of talk about how he's been a reforming minister. And for someone who's worked in the legal field, that is true.
Okay.
And I think the public don't understand it some of the time because there's been so much negative focus recently, somewhat justifiably, on the whole GSOC debacle and the whistleblowers and how, you know, there has been arrogant dealing in this regard. But he has been extremely reforming with regard to prisons, and that's not a popular area, obviously, with the public. There's not a whole heap of sympathy, but he has done more for the reform of the prison system in the last couple of years than any minister for 30 years. He also was one of the only senior ministers to speak strongly about the rights of women to their health in relation to the Protection of Life During Pregnancy Bill, making the important point that there's not a single medical intervention that men would be denied if their health requires it. So there are many ways that I think he's made an extremely important contribution to the Irish legal system. It's just unfortunate that his way of expressing himself at times and his reluctance to kind of fess up when he has been, you know, in error or has not behaved perhaps as he should. And now that could again be partly to due to not receiving information or receiving wrong information. And I would just say that when the minister prepares any speech, he is fed information by the civil servants.
But your point about civil servants, you know, at one level, not passing things on, but they are filters as well. I mean, even in a hospital, there's a tertiary system. You go from one specialist, you know, a generic to a specialist to maybe an even more narrow specialist in terms of knowledge and information about a specific aspect of your problem. So somebody has to decide what the minister will get. Otherwise, he's just the sluice gates of Ardna Crusha open every morning and he's swamped.
Well, absolutely. And that's what I'm saying. Ministers don't hire their own staff, or not all of them. You know, he inherited a Department of Justice. He inherited the people in it. And those people had their own personal allegiances and ideas about reform or the lack thereof. And many civil servants, many people, look, many people in any organisation are scared of change and reform. Sometimes the working methods and personal style of a minister might not go down well with their civil servants. Now, I'm not saying that is the case.
Just stay there for a sec, but Jane, have you... Okay, so you're saying that the Department of Justice you found unreceptive, to say the least, to what you were working on?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I would say that they were unreceptive.
And I just wonder how do they, insofar as you can tell us, or anyone else, how do they compare and contrast with other government departments and other parts of the civil service?
I think this, and this again, I've never worked in the civil service, so I cannot comment. There are some great people in there, but the Department of Justice is hugely hierarchical. And
but you're saying it's straight from central casting and yes, minister?
My experience is somewhat of that nature.
Stay there for a sec, Jane. I want to bring John and Clontarf in, who's been holding 51551, and we'll come back to you in a sec. John, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. Your last contributor, I think, said a lot of what I was going to say about the minister. I just get that part out of the way first. I consider him a very intelligent, very reforming, bringing lots of legislation through the door, and I think it would be very foolish if he resigned. Now, to get on to my attitude and my my view of the whistleblowers, granted they're certainly necessary if they saw things that weren't being done right. And often you find in situations like that, more than your own work, Joe, or any other work, that people who turn like, I would be very careful what way I put it now, but people who turn to be whistleblowers, usually you find that they have some grievance or they have been treated wrong. And, you know, it's a kind of a way of getting back at authority, right?
Yeah. Okay.
For example, myself, I had a reason to feel like that on at least one or two occasions. But instead of turning to be a whistleblower, I actually represented people. Now, that might be a bit of a unusual for you, but that's the way I kind of got my, what will I call a grievance. I represented people who are genuinely in deep trouble. And
okay, you helped.
So that was my way. Now, I do appreciate what these two guys do or did, but at the same time, it certainly I certainly wouldn't like to be one. The other thing I'd say would have made me very uncomfortable if I was aware that we had a whistleblower in Sochi or wherever other place I was, that, you know, no more than in your own profession, Joe, if you had somebody there and they called you in one evening and said, look, I have something serious to say to you. And if you felt afterwards that they were wired up, like it's Like, I mean, you know, it's a terrible situation now again with these phone buggings and all that. But it seems to be okay for Mr. Wallace and Miss Daly. A whistleblower can wire himself up and tape people. Now, I think that's quite that's quite a serious thing. You know, in other words, if you're in a work situation and you feel you're being watched all the time, that you're being listened to all the time, it makes for a very uncomfortable working environment. And I am aware of this, and I am aware of people who can find themselves in that situation. That's, in other words, you can respect. I won't mention names or anything, but you can.
But
respect isn't,
but it, but I take your point. I know you're talking about Maurice McCabe, and he wasn't walking around like the $6 million man, wired up to disguise. He talked about one. I think it was
but he
two.
People.
I know there was a couple of instances, but he's argued publicly why he felt he had to do that at the time. He wasn't going around taping everybody. But I know I do take your point. But surely, John, address this point. After the Garda inspected report, which said there was widespread failings in the penalty point system, as indeed they didn't put it this way, as alleged by the Garda whistleblowers, is not the amazing thing, one other aspect of this amazing scenario now unfolded, is that of the 13,500 Gardaí that the former Commissioner Martin Callanan referred to at the PAC, he said only two of them had actually raised any concerns about this. But it now looks like, it's now clear that there were serious concerns. So isn't that bizarre? Only two out of 13,500 blew the whistle.
Yeah, but maybe there was many more, Joe. But you must remember, it's. I think it's the superintendent has the power to squash cases. You know, I don't think it's maybe an inspector, but certainly it's normally the district officer. I think has the power to do that.
Okay, but at the same time,
and I think you had a gentleman on yesterday. You know, you have situations, Joe, and I mean, you know well that. There's situations now, maybe with computerization and everything else. I mean, I was in a very good position, and I also worked in immigration. And a lot of people who come to this country were here just to improve their lifestyle. But because of our sympathetic way in the Garda Síochána on Burkee, there were situations where, okay, there might be a little bit off the mark, but we get them into the system, we get them legalized. And maybe if you're going by the rules and regulations, those people could be back in China or somewhere now in a miserable situation. I think there's a lot, you know, if we, unfortunately, if we get rid of all this, if we go by the book the whole time, I think it's going to be very sad for a lot of people, ordinary people, and then maybe be from China or from Ireland. You know what I mean?
And I know we've heard the other argument during lots of problems, but you think, therefore, that what's happened is a disservice to the country, will change the discretion, the flexibility.
Joe, I think we'll go like the London Met. There'll be no discretion if you're caught on going through Fairview doing whatever in a red light or whatever. Look, that's a serious. But you know what I mean. If I'm going through 60 kilometres an hour instead of 50, I think any guard that would, in other words, if any, Joe, everybody in Ireland, well, most people know somebody in the police force. The other thing, though, before
your point when you said that everyone in Ireland knows somebody in the police force, you're saying, which is the truth, that's a positive, because they are part of the community, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Okay, but I mean, anyone that says to you, Joe, they couldn't say anybody, but most people that you know in your society, in your walk of life, that say to you that they didn't say to a guard at some stage, look, by the way, do you know Johnny Down? He's stationed in Santar or wherever. Anyone that says they didn't approach somebody at some stage, and we're not talking about insurance, we're not talking about drunken driving, we're talking about what one would call that the majority of people get caught going doing 60 in a 50 or whatever, in a bus lane, whatever you like. You
okay,
know?
And you think
but anyone that,
you...
that says to you that they didn't, that's about. I'll give you one example. You know, when John O'Donoghue was Minister for Justice, he was talking about. Zero tolerance, okay?
Yeah.
And I was talking to a gentleman one night, he's young, that was going to St. Mary's College in Rathmines at the time, and he was doing his junior cert. So I said to him, I said, I don't agree with that. He said, what do you mean? Well, he said, okay, a crowd of lads, young lads come in from Mary's or Blackrock or wherever, or Belvedere, and they have a night out and they might be in Grafton's here and someone will push them against the window in McDonald's and they're all arrested, they're all brought down to Pier Street, they're all charged. I said, that's zero tolerance. So, like, I think RT are kind of, they've gone so worked up now with Sinn Féin, Mick Wallace, who is the CEO, 4 million to the revenue, and nothing about that. Like, what I'm saying is these people are moralising to us in the back benches. Wallace, Sinn Féin, who are shooting Gardaí not long ago. Like, I just feel that the silent majority are being overrun by these minority groups.
Okay.
And I think the middle ground are being forgotten about. I do agree, Joe, that there was too much of it going on, and what McCabe and Wilson did probably did some service. But okay. I think it's going to be killing now, you know?
Okay, other people are staying. Stay there. Other people want to come in as well. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
51551 text. Pat is in Waterford. Pat.
Hello, how are you?
Good. You're listening to John and various. John says Alan Shatter should stay. He's a fine, fine minister. You disagree?
Yeah, I think he should take off his rose tinted glasses for a start. He could get a job as director of elections with Fine Gael, the way he was talking. Look, the reality is.
Not a Fine Gael man. Sorry, Pat. I don't refer to you. I mean, excuse me,
could I
have that? I'm not a Fine Gael man.
I didn't say you are. I said you could have been. I didn't say you are. I said you could have been. So
yeah, just make your point. Don't be taking on take on me. Make your point.
Excuse me, you're taking on the whole establishment there. You said you were speaking there
about
the silent majority. You see, you're interrupting again. That's a typical politician type person. The reality is that the silent majority you talked about, the ordinary person, most of them want rid of Alan Shatter. They've lost faith in him. They don't trust him. And he's an albatross around the government, Nick. Even the Labour Party, even the Labour. But you see, this is a typical Fine Gael play. And I'm not saying you're a Fine Gael man, but that's exactly what Enda Kenny does every day of the week. He stands up and he shouts about Sinn Féin this, Sinn Féin that. I don't care about Sinn Féin. What I care about is trusting the people in the system. And the system right now is the ministers. We don't trust the minister. He's the guy in justice who is going to be over the investigation of himself. He has to go. There is no other way about it. He can't be investigating himself or have anything to do with it. It could be like a fixed investigation if he's involved. He cannot be the supervisor of his own investigation. He has got to step aside in some shape or form, let the investigation happen, and then let the people decide whether they want him again or not. That's as simple as this.
But in fairness, any of the investigations that are ongoing, there haven't been specific allegations against Alan Shatter that are going to be investigated. One of them is investigating whether it was bugging or not. Whether there was bugging or not down in Capel Street.
It's his lack of action and the lack of belief that the people have in his ability to deal with these things. It's like he's getting the old cliche, 1,000 cuts. He is every day of the week. It's drip, drip, drip since Christmas about this. The reality is, at this stage, there are so many things there that we don't trust him about. He has to step aside and let the investigations continue because even if he's found to be completely innocent of it, by implication at the moment, he seems to be involved in it, only by implication. And until such time as he's completely ruled out of being any blame, he has to, as the Minister for Justice, he has to step aside. He cannot be the senior person over, which he would be.
Okay, John, what do you think of that?
Well, I don't know where he's coming from. Alan Shatter, as you pointed out to the
gentleman. Stay there, Pat, because your line isn't helping, unfortunately. Go ahead, John.
As you pointed out from the gentleman in Waterford, nothing that's been investigated, Alan Shatter was involved in. Alan Shatter is a minister. He's not in a guard station every day doing these things, you know. So I was on the phone, Josh.
Okay, your line is...
Does he want Mick Wallace in as Minister for Justice?
Yeah, well, let me put that point to Pat. I know you're.
He's just picking on the individuals.
Yeah, but that's no. I know. For John, that was a facetious point about Mick Wallace because he couldn't be because he's not in the government parties for a start. But is that not another point that if Alan Shatter does resign, he's simply replaced by Simon Coveney or Leo Varadkar or whatever?
But Right now, they're not implicated in the
Okay, take that point. John Muldowney in Kilkenny. John.
How's it going, Joe?
Back to how the system is actually operating for real people on the ground. What happened?
It's basically in relation to not getting the summons or getting the fine in the post. The guy on there earlier on about it. And basically the same thing has happened to me, but it seems to be rampant because what happened to me last year was two Gardaí called to my house. Now, I wasn't there. I think my mother answered the door. And of course, she got a shock straight away seeing guards calling to the door because he always seems the worst. But basically was saying it's a summons, written a summons for your son. He didn't reply to a fine, so he has to go to court. So that's fair enough. So I got hold of that. So I said, listen, and she even said to herself, this guy, he never got in the post. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. So I went up, I took a day off work. Went up to the court, met the guard beforehand before it all started, explained to him. I said, listen, I said, I'm not avoiding this. I'm not saying I'm not guilty. I said, about speeding, I was speeding, fair enough. But I said, I didn't get a fine in the post. I said, it'd be in my own interest to pay the fine if I didn't get it in the post because it'd be a lot cheaper. I think it would be €80 plus £2 points. But now that I'm in court, it's a day off work and God knows what's going to happen in court. So he more or less said, listen, he said, wait and we see you go inside. Mm-hmm. So we went inside and the first thing the judge said, now she was a sound judge, but the first thing she said before the whole court day started, she said, listen, just letting you know, anybody that's here that has, that's been summoned to court that didn't get a fine in the post, she said, well, I'll deal with this later on in the day. But she said, right now I'm dealing with people that's coming in with guilty pleas so we can get through the process. So I said, fair enough. So it came to my turn and I said, she said, Johnny, pleading guilty, not guilty. So listen, I'm pleading guilty. But I said, the fact is, I said, I never got this in the post. I said, obviously, again, it's really my interest to pay it straight away. It'd be a lot cheaper than coming out here to court, okay, day off work and everything. And she goes, John, so the way it is, she said, that's fair enough. But if you're contesting this, it'll be later on today or tomorrow before we can get to it. So I was like, well, sure, if it goes on until tomorrow, it's another day off work. So I said, oh, here, I'll go ahead. I looked over at the guard, see if he do put in some input. He didn't. So that's fair enough. So then she turned around, she said, right, John, she said, €250, £2 points. So I was like, if you got it in the post, you'd have paid the €80, got to do penalty points, but now it's a day out in court. So obviously, the fact that she said it as well, even before the day started, it's obviously going on and on and on. So I don't know, what's the idea of this thing? Maybe it's to create more money for, I don't know what, bigger the fines, but I mean, it would tie up.
Okay, but your point is everyone's going on about, at the establishment level, about penalty points and the system, and you're saying when the system is looked at, it could be operating a lot, lot better.
Oh, it could be.
Fairer for people.
Exactly, not only fair that people, but God, it would free up a lot more time in court. Because, I mean, I wouldn't have gone to court. I would have paid it there and then it would be a cheaper fine. And the thing about it is, it happened to a friend of mine about 2 months ago. She rang me up and said, Johnson, things that have happened to me, it's happened to you. These guards called to her house with a summons. Apparently, I think the guard did the call in person to issue a summons. And she didn't know. She got a shock of her life, thought maybe it was her son or daughter in an accident or something. She goes, what's going on?
Okay, John, that's John Muldowney, Kilkenny. Pat is in Skerries in Dublin, a retired guard. Pat, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You want to congratulate the whistleblowers.
Yes, very much, yes. They're two cabmen, but I'm aware of what they would have been up against, and the public know what they're up against. And to get this far, because the whole system has been thrown at them, and with people coming and tying rats to John Wilson's door, his colleagues stopping them in patrol cars, searching his car, etc. He has outlined it all. He would have been up against it. But the biggest problem, one of the biggest problems the whistleblowers would have had, would be dealing with their colleagues, who you would be surprised at how little support they would get from their fellow workers. Mm-hmm. And I think it's great that they emerged. They had to walk very warily, play by all the rules, and they still got their message out.
And as a former Garda, what do you think of what the Commissioner said about them?
All of what I said was frightful. It disqualified him for that job he was doing. He was due to retire a year or two ago. He should have gone when his time was up. There was a Martin Donlan contested it in the court and failed. I don't know what attitude the ex-Commissioner took at that stage, but the things he said about them were hopeless. I believe he was appointed in difficult circumstances, controversial circumstances, when he was appointed because of the Boylan incident in the drugs, etc. So I think what he said there, and he had every opportunity to take it back. He didn't do it. I don't know why.
But Pat, surely in an organisation the size of the Gardaí, One, the percentage-wise, vast majority, fine, upstanding, etc. But there's always going to be a couple who are corrupt, whatever, or will take money, and that's and it's one surprise. In fact, looking at other police forces, that it hasn't been more widespread in Ireland, thankfully. But two, you say the whistleblowers would be treated badly. Why?
Oh yes, that's true. I have listened. I have a lot of dealings with the guards still, and I'm familiar. The approach towards the whistleblowers from colleagues would be, you would be amazed at how negative it would be. They should be looked on. There will be a minority of guards and ex-guards delighted with what they've done. I heard Mr. Wallace and Claire Daly saying that they're approached by an ever-increasing number of ex-guards, etc., listing stuff that they were troubled about. And that is the case. The Garda, it's quite like the church. Power is sweet. And when these people are in those powerful positions, they will jealously mind the position. But I'm delighted with what's happening. We're paying a heavy price to get the Garda reformed at last. We had the Morris Tribunal. Gads had a poor record there. We had that recent, Smithick thing, and the retired commissioner wasn't happy with the way it was conducted. I heard even retired chief superintendents calling their colleagues to assess the data on which Mr. Smithick arrived at his conclusion. They wish to disagree with him. They need more control, this whatever you call that new body they're putting to come between the guards and the Minister for Justice.
An independent policing board. So
very important. All that. It is really in a bad state, and it has been in a bad state for a long time. And those whistleblowers done a terrific service. There'll be lots more of them if they thought it was safe to come out.
And do they not think it's safe to come out?
Oh, no. Well, they'll be very slow to come out up to this. You might judge I'm speaking with some passion. I'm retired 14 years, but still I have... very fresh memories of what it's like when you try to take a stand on things, however justly.
And did that happen to you?
It did indeed. Mm. And it's a thing. I heard Mr. Wilson on the radio.
Well, let me put it. Sorry, I'm not cutting across, Pat. Is one of the things you're saying? If you're saying thanks to John Wilson and Morris McCabe, if you tried to do what you did 14 or many years ago, if you tried to do it today, you would feel you might get a bit more traction or support.
Well, maybe in the last couple of months, but up to this, they didn't get much support. Yeah. And that's why I think it was a great achievement. And it has been a very interesting time. And your programme and other programmes and the public are very engaged here. Last night I was listening to Vincent Brown. There's a poll, should Mr. Shatter resign or not? The figures were 92% of the people polling wanted him to go, 8% didn't.
But well, you don't know how many people participated, because we have telepolls, we get 22,000 in 10 minutes. But anyway, I just looked at how many people. Anyway, that's, I'm sure. Okay, now say there, Pat. I need to let Kevin in, and don't I need to take a break as well? 51551.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Kevin O'Connor is in Wexford. Kevin, you say Alan Shattered, the minister, has lost the confidence of the people. Why?
To be honest with you, Joe, I've listened to him on a couple of occasions. And I've never heard a man give a straight answer yet. He quotes Acts. He takes sections and subsections out of Acts and whatever when he's asked a question. Now, to the average Joe Soap, who doesn't know these Acts and know these subsections and all, like, you'd have to go and research his answer before you actually know what he said. The man just will not give a straight answer. And then when it comes to quoting reports and whatever, he takes pieces out of context. The pieces that suit him, he quotes. The pieces that don't suit him, he just totally ignores.
Okay, let me bring John in, who's been holding. Say there, Kevin is in Wexford. John and Cork. John, good afternoon.
How are you getting on, Jim?
You're listening. You were in court yesterday.
I was in court yesterday. It's trivial now in the greater scheme of things. You know, a gentleman on earlier, he was in court yesterday with his daughter. Well, I had something similar. I was in court now yesterday. I was served a summons because of a speeding fine.
Penalty point.
Now, Well, at the time the fixed penalty notice came, it didn't come to me now. It actually came to my sister-in-law because I was driving her car. So what you do is you flipped over the form, you fill in the details, who was driving the car. I actually filled it in myself, it's in my own handwriting, sent it back, and heard nothing until I got the summons. And when I tried to pay the summons then, I was too late, it was in motion, I had to go to court. They just didn't want enough. €150, bang, 4 penalty points.
And you think you didn't get a fair hearing?
It's not that I didn't get a fair hearing, Joe. Fixed penalty notice to me to give me the opportunity to go and pay the €60 or €80, whatever it is.
Okay, there's a lot of it, obviously, just from today. And I know that the topic is it's gone wider, but there's a lot of that issue coming up today. People saying they didn't get their fixed penalty notice and they ended
up. The courts are a cash cow. They're a cash cow for the government. You know, if the little so-and-so's now knocking around card up on their drugs charges and their whatever, they get nothing. It's the motorist on the road, nailed again, all the time.
Okay.
Aideen. We're still on the greater scheme of things. Well, thanks for hearing me out anyway.
Okay, thanks indeed, John. Aideen is in Offaly. Aideen, good afternoon.
Yes, Joe, just to say, that man who was speaking earlier said that everybody knows Garda and they can get their penalty points crashed. Like, I don't know any guards and I have penalty points and I certainly wouldn't dream of approaching any guards.
And I presume, by the way, I presume a lot of people would never approach.
No, I say whatever he's talking about, they're very much in the minority. And thanks to John Wilson and Garda Sergeant, Maurice McCabe, we now will have a fair system and it's a level playing field from now on, hopefully.
But people say no discretion is not necessarily good.
No, I don't think
you know,
so
black and black, it's not, it's, it shouldn't be black
unless,
and white.
Unless somebody has an excellent excuse, you know. But anyway, I just want to commend those two men. I think they've sacrificed a lot and they've done the state a huge service.
And what do you think now, to finish where we began an hour and 15 minutes ago, what do you think of the developments over the last few days in terms of Martin Callanan resigning and now the focus on Alan Shatter again and then the time sequence for this revelation about these widespread, allegedly, taping and recording in Garda stations?
It's all very strange. It's very, very weird. I mean, I think people are absolutely bamboozled out here.
Okay.
It's incredible.
Okay.
It's like a thriller.
Okay. Thanks indeed, Aideen Urell. And Alan Shatter writes a good novel, doesn't he? And maybe he's writing a thriller as well. But that's the words of Aideen. Thanks indeed. 51551 continues. Emma Laffin producing. Derek Mooney is next.
1850-715-815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.